Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back. If you're new to me, I'm Shu Allegra, the founder of Grace and Hope Consulting, where we empower people to achieve mental and emotional wellness, reach their full potential, and live fulfilling lives. So everything we do here evolves around resilience. And I'm inviting some new friends to the conversation this year to kind of talk about their resilience story. What does that look like for them? And what are some of the wisdom they learned along the way that they can pass on to all of us as we build our own resilience? So today I have Christopher King with me. Do you want to just introduce yourself, friend, and let us know who you are and what you do?
Like you said, thank you so much for that. I'm Christopher King II here, 27 years old, born in Dallas, Texas, hometown of Forney, Texas, a college graduate generation. And I write self-help books. And I also have a YouTube page where I basically just kind of use my self-help books. And I just wanted to put a face to it. Mm-hmm. So I built a platform just to help folks and pretty much give back to, I guess, anybody that's out there that's going through certain different situations or trials mm-hmm. in their lives mm-hmm. and basically how they can overcome them, you know, in any way, shape or fashion.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for being here. And thank you for what you do. It's thank so needed. You know, someone who benefits from those resources myself, you know, in that area and work and that stuff, doing the same, you know, similar stuff. I know it's needed. And so I'm curious, how did you get into that? Like, what led to you? You could be doing anything and everything, right? Why that? What self-help books?
I guess I have to date back to school. I love writing. Reading is something I love doing as well. I can go back to when my mom used to take us to Barnes and Nobles as kids, and mm-hmm. she always stressed education. Mm-hmm. And so reading was something we picked up on, and we always had, like, we used to have book reports we had to do in the summertime. So she would make us read and stuff like that.
My
and writing,
kind of mom,
and,
right?
You know, right. And those things stayed with me. So when I got through different situations in college and even in high school, you know, I was in British literature classes and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So writing has never been foreign to me. And so I use it as a way to propel myself to be the best I could be and get through certain situations when I was battling with depression and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So that's where it came from.
Awesome. No, writing is such a therapeutic tool. Yeah, I so relate to that. I write and I was telling a friend recently, it's a, when I'm overwhelmed, I write. When my emotions are not, mm-hmm. I write. When I'm happy, I write. And because mm-hmm. it just becomes such a way to process it. And I've seen the power of, you know, of journaling just in itself per se, you know, and writing in general in my own life as I went through different trials, you know, different challenges. And to the point where, you know, I actually started incorporating that with some of the other things that I do. Yes, you know, as a counselor, I tell people, yeah, you have to journal. But now we even have like a whole program for people been through trauma to, you know, bounce back, you know, from hurdles in their lives, that we actually have a whole journaling mm-hmm. program just for that, for them to use writing as a way to process, to purge and repurpose, you know, what they've been through. So I love that. I love that. And so you mentioned a little bit, like going through some of your own struggles, like you only share what you're comfortable. But I think, again, it kind of puts things into perspective, because often people are like, I'm the only one going through this, right? You know, and honestly, because I guess I work in the mental health field, but because I am a person myself who experienced, you know, mental health challenges, I'm passionate mm-hmm. about this, right? So, and I know that in our Black and brown communities, we don't talk enough about it. You know, for Black men to say, oh, when I battle depression, people don't talk like that, right? And we need to get it out. We need to get, because the more we talk about it, the more we normalize the conversation and the more people can be feel comfortable seeking help. So, I mean, I'm sure that's not the only thing you've been through, but I'm just like, I just wanted to kind of say how I appreciate you verbalizing it and putting that into context for other Black men out there. It's okay to talk about it.
Thank you. I have to take it back to the foundation of what I have, a strong mm-hmm. Black woman instilled mm-hmm. that into me. Mm-hmm. My mom is someone who told me at a young age, you have to deal with your stuff, like anything you're going through, you know, communicate and talk. So she's my best friend still to this mm-hmm. day. So like, mm-hmm. she's somebody I would talk to, and we would talk to each other. And if something was going on, she would tell me to get it out. And mm-hmm. somebody who dealt with anger and and depression and things of that nature, anxiety, something I still deal with to this day. Talking and writing helped me through those things. So when I got to college, I had to do it on my own. So like there was phone calls. I actually went to Prairie View A&M University. And if you know how the time difference and travel from Dallas to, or the Dallas area where I was in Forney, Texas to Houston, it's like about 3-4 hours. And so I didn't have my system there. And so when I went to college, I quickly fell into, you know, my trials and tribulations there where I was depressed. You know, I didn't know anybody pretty much there. I think I knew a couple of people. I went to school with them in middle school and somehow we linked up in college. But I didn't really have like a solid foundation. So I fell hard.
The support system. Yeah, it's important.
Right. So I can only do stuff through the phone. And I was used to my mom being hands on with me. So it was very hard at first. And so I learned then where I had to, you know, talk more and kind of find my way. But I wasn't writing. I wasn't really putting a lot into focus, but I was doing stuff on the fly and being 18, just being dropped off on campus and not being away from your family for that long period of time was really hard. So the first thing that I did was kind of like prayer and, you know, trying to find God in my own way and things of that nature. And that's where my mom would talk to me and she would call me. And because I started getting closed off because, you know, you're becoming a man now, you want to kind of try to handle everything on your own. And she would call, I would fight her off and she would steady pray for me. And, you know, I would still go to parties and I would, you know, go to class late and I wasn't really just
doing what I was supposed to.
Right. And it actually took my first semester, I skated by. So I was able to, you know, I'm like, oh, first generation grad. I didn't, you know, I met the standards to stay in the campus. So at that point, I'm thinking I got it.
And, I made the cut.
And that this is where the self-exploration stuff comes in, you know, where I figure out like this is a learning process and you just did enough, you know, just grace. That was grace I had. You know, God was like, let me know you can do this. Like you barely applied yourself and you can do this. So my second semester hit and I just fell off, you know, and I'll just say a situation where I was kind of partying a lot, drinking, smoking, doing stuff with my friends and stuff like that, kind of falling off with my friend group that I was with.
Go ahead, you can continue.
Okay, so the one particular situation I want to go into, because it was actually my second semester of college, and that's where everything kind of hit me. And the situation that really stopped my world is where I was, where I thought I was going to jail at one certain point because of some of the mistakes I was making, like going to class and hanging out with my the wrong crowd and not really just taking my the opportunity I had, you know, just not taking advantage of it when I had the chance to, and, you know, capitalizing on what I did before. And, you know, the situation was like an act of God because, you know, it was a Black officer. And like I said, it was in a city where Sandra Bland had her situation and it was a couple of years before and, you know, dealing with police officers in the Waller County or Prairie View area. You're not really, you know, it's not a good situation. Let's just say that.
No.
And so luckily it was a understanding cop and he was a, you know, Black cop, and he was asking questions and he wasn't really what you say. I don't think he was initially trying to book us or take us in that day, but he was checking us out and he seen we were good kids and we come from good backgrounds, the three of us, because he only, it was a, more than us in the car, but it was three of us that he pulled out and he put me in handcuffs. He said, this is for my protection and yours. Of course, I understood it was a lot of us. And so I was just kind of sitting over the back of the car and I was looking around and I had a moment with God where it's like, did I change all the way how I was doing things? I just knew something had to stop and he was trying to pull me. And so that was one of the situations. And I went on and I felt that the rest of that semester because I already had dug a hole. But that summer, you know, I came home, I started working and I lost my scholarship. I had like a scholarship going and my mom found out about it and she was a little upset, you know, like what happened. I was like, I told you I didn't do well. I didn't tell you how bad I did, but I didn't do well. And she was like, wow, like, you know, what's going on? And I'm like, you know, I'm still not letting her know about things, you know, because I'm still trying to handle things on my own, but not understanding that I went out into a different environment and I'm trying to find the best way to cope.
Exactly.
Right. Right. And so I initially go back and struggled again, but I'm working hard. I'm trying to balance. I'm still partying. I'm still getting myself together and still trying to find the right friend group, you know, as well. There's distractions on campus. I'm at a campus where it's more women than it is. It's more women than it is to the guys on campus. Mm-hmm. We're outnumbered. So it's a lot of distractions there as well. So
dynamics. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm trying to do the best I can, and I come back and all of a sudden it's Christmas break and they're telling me, hey, you know, you're in jeopardy of not being in school. You've been put on suspension. We're going to hold your financial aid. You're not going to be able to, you know, financially be able to come back. And the only way you can do this is you do an appeal. But when I got the appeal letter, it was like a week left of my Christmas break.
Wow.
So you can see how devastating that was. I get that letter. I talk to my mom, like, you know, the semester before, the way they have it is I can't even register for classes. I got to see what my grades are looking like.
Mm-hmm.
But this is now I got this over the head. Now I see what my grades looking like. And it's like, okay, I didn't register for class.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a letter. They pretty much reinstate me. And mm-hmm. then I don't know where I'm going to live. I was trying to get stuff going and funds. I had like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And
wow.
Somehow I was able to talk to the dean, my mom, we talked to the people, but the process with that is I got to school like a week or two late. It was like, you know, after syllabus week, you know, you have your little time, you can get stuff going because people drop classes all the time. That's nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to work financial aid. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to pay for housing. We're doing all kinds of stuff. My mom's working from the other side from where she's at, trying to talk to financial aid. I'm going to them. And the adversity that I got was they were telling me I had a person at financial aid kind of tell me, if I were you, I would just pack it up and, you know, try again next semester.
Wow. That is
I ain't gonna lie. It gets a little overwhelming to me because it just talks about my journey.
Thanks for sharing that. I know it's not easy, but these are things people go through. Nobody, because we don't talk about it, people don't realize when they're not alone and they can push through. So please continue as you come.
Yeah. So, okay. So this is crazy. When he told me that, I was immediately devastated.
Yeah.
And so give me a moment. And I had also just met this young lady too, because mm-hmm. she was I had just got comfortable with her. So mm-hmm. I was on campus and I was trying to figure it out and telling my mom, like, they're telling me to come back home. Like, we just drove out here. You know, I'm in my apartment. I don't know what to do. And she was like, let's give it another day. You can talk to financial aid. Somehow I was able to get some things going and money going. I talked to my dean and he was telling me about, you know, I said, I'm telling my situation. I'm reading, you know, just let him know everything. And
right.
He was like, so how do I believe that? He said, I understand what you're saying, but like, how do I believe that? And I'm like, you just got to trust me. Like, I don't, mm-hmm. you know, I'm letting you know what the situation is. I want to go back to school. And so he override me to be able to get and register for classes. That semester was a make or break.
Favor.
Right. So that semester was a make a great semester, make a break semester for me, because mm-hmm. I had to make a certain GPA that I've never made before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's just say, you know, I that's why I say it's an act of God, you know, because a young lady that I ended up dating at the time, she was on the dean's list every semester. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of watching her
mm-hmm.
and how she did stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was learning how to be a student,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the right way, because I never mm-hmm. knew how to study the right way and do mm-hmm. stuff. I learned how to maneuver. And I went through so many different things in that semester where, you know, I was failing class. I had like A's, like almost A's and B's in every class. And I had one class, it was economics class. And I literally failed, like mm-hmm. the little, I guess you would say the midterms. and everything. And I was like, I asked God, I was literally in my middle of my floor in my dorm. I was like, why? Like, I'm trying so hard, God, like, what more can I do? And I literally was on all fours and I was praying and I just felt something grab me. And I'm not going to try to fabricate or anything. I just know that I felt something grab me. And and that was the Holy Spirit to me. And that was enough for me to believe that I had support because I was in my within.
I got you, right? Yeah.
And so after that happened, it's like the cycle kept going because I did great that semester, but, you know, I had another semester to go and it was like a hill to climb because I kept trying to, you know, get out of there because, you know, the mess I made my second semester and starting out, I didn't start out so great. Mm-hmm. And so that last semester, it was like I was continuing to dig myself out of a hole. So every semester I had to register late. So I would go to my dean and it was like almost humiliating. It was like, you're coming to register on the, you know, the, what is it, like the second week of school or whatnot, or second. And it was like people would be inside of the advisement office and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So, excuse me. And so that would be humiliating to me. It was because I was like, you know, I work hard and it didn't represent who I was, but I made a mistake. And so I had to keep reliving that mistake over and over and over and over again, but I kept pushing through. Yeah. So it got to a point where I was at a family outing and my mom was explaining, because it was a family friend, he was going to go to the same school I was going to. And my mom kind of like let him, Chris is, you know, he been messing up. You went down there and messed up and such and such. And she was basically trying to tell him like, you know, hey, you know, here's the route and here this can be. But I took it as a way like, she's kind of putting me down a little bit. And I got back to school and I remember I was talking to her on the phone and we had this conversation I'd never forget. And she said, Chris, if you don't share your story, how is God going to bless you? I was so ashamed of some of the things that I had went through in the past that I never, just kind of lived in my truth. I always was ashamed. So I walked around campus like that. I approached every day like that. Like, I messed up. So I just, and in that moment, I stopped allowing what would you call the situation to be a hindrance to me, or I looked at it as a downfall. I actually looked at it as a strength because I continued to push through. And once I did that, that's when I became president of organizations. I got more involved in campus and I started telling my story. You get what I'm saying? To other folks and start being an inspiration to everyone around me. And I started understanding like, okay, there's people who are not going to talk. You could be a voice for people and they can understand you and you can, you know, God can use you as a vessel. And so after I started doing that, my life changed. So like my friend circle changed, you know, some relationships ended, but I have friends to this day, that they knew my story and I always used to tell them, it's a bond of brothers. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna write that in the book. That's going to go in the book. And so as I got ready to graduate, that's what I was doing. I was building up a book. And I would just say it, you know, you can speak things into existence. So I was getting ready, because I used to say this, I'm going to graduate. I can't wait till I graduate. And I start changing it to I'm going to graduate. And when I graduate, I'm going to do this. And it's like you just start walking into it. God just start opening doors. And I look around and I'm scared to go to the advisement office because I'm thinking that I'm in class and I'm letting them know, hey, I'm coming to summer school. I'm going to both sessions. And they told me, he's like, well, if you do that, you're going to graduate in the fall. And I said, wait, I thought I was going to be back another year. I called my mom. I said, Mom, you ain't going to believe this. I said, Mom, I think I'm going to graduate in the fall. And I was like, she was like, really? Like, that's kind of, you know, that's sooner than what we thought, you know, because my whole thing was, I was embarrassed because I got to the campus in 2013 and, you know, everybody has that. They say the fifth year, everybody gets the fifth year, but I was so close to actually graduating, you know, in 2017, if it wasn't a few cuts and turns there, I could have got out, but to mm-hmm. say that I graduated the year after and it'd be 2018 was just a blessing to me.
Mm-hmm.
It still was a blessing to me because all the things that I went through. And so the book came after that, but more things happened because I graduated and I didn't have a job. You know, I gained weight. I was depressed, you know, sitting in my parents' house and, you know, being 24, a graduate. It was a lot that came in because I had built up a system and I was being so active. Mm-hmm. And so I had to deal with my depression in a closed off space.
Yeah, a whole different transition mm-hmm. again, right? Yeah,
do right. Right, right, right. So that was challenging. And I lost my granddad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after that, you know, it was a lot of stuff that went on. So after that, I said, you know what? I'm going to write a book.
Mm.
And so I wrote a book. I told my mom, I said, I'm going to start it out. And I first started writing on my journal and I was just going through chapters. And I'm like, you know, I want to make a guide, a step-by-step guide. And that's when it came to the 24 ways to discover self-enlightenment. And it would just, I don't want to put it far as me saying like, I did this myself, but it was more about self-empowerment because at the end of the day, my journey came through me discovering myself, spend a lot of time with myself because I was scared to deal with Chris a lot. Just being young, because I, you know, I'm an overthinker and it's not, I thought it wasn't good for me to be around myself, but I learned how to deal with myself. So once I did that, I was able to push myself a little bit more and, you know, get a little more out of life. And so the step-by-step guide and me putting a book together, it took months and I gave myself, I said, by my 25th birthday, I think I started in July, and by October of 2019, I was done with the book, October 21st.
Awesome.
So that's how that went.
Man, thank you so much for sharing. I know it's not easy, but mm-hmm. you have no idea how your story just will touch so many people. Because a lot of young people, male, female, you know, Black, white, Asian, you know, Hispanic, we go through transition from home to college. And nobody talks about the adjustment, right? It impacts people's mental health more than we realize. And, you know, we can Google this stuff with people listening and watching. You know, you can Google the stats there. A lot of young people, many will lose their faith in going to college. Many will lose, you know, their identity. Many will lose their principles. Many will lose their mind. Like, let's be real. The mental health gets impacted because of just how huge a transition that is. And then there's still, yes, there now there are more resources, but there's still not enough resources. People don't know about all the resources available, right? To help people navigate.
There you go. Exactly.
And so exactly. It's good to prepare, you know, and you know, for all of us, like, you know, I said 2020, like, oh, now I know, like, before I go for a transition, I need to prepare for it. And I think that as a society, we go through life, especially in our, you know, American society here, it's like we go through life just doing things, I do as I go, not always planning for the things that, you know, needs to be done, if that makes sense. So we plan for, you know, we plan for an accident, right? That's why we have, you know, policies for car insurance, right? We plan for illnesses. Yes, we have medical insurance for that. But nobody plans for the toll, the mental, emotional, psychological toll of just living. Right. And so if you think about it that way, then if I know, like, I'm going to go for college, it's a huge transition, you know, what would that look like? I don't even know, but I'll be away from my support system. I won't have my friends there. You know, I need to remember who I am and what I stand for so that when I go into that new environment, I can keep duplicating that. Right. But it starts by, again, kind of, you know, being more proactive for all of us, not just for college. You know, I see these people moving from a state to another. We'll find the house, the job, but then we don't think about the mental, again, toll of moving to a different state, right? So it's, if we start approaching our mental health from that perspective, you know, more as a prevention, just like we prevent everything else, right? You know, if I know I'm going to drive from Dallas to Houston, I need to put enough gas in my car because it's a 3-hour trip, you know, half a tank or even a quarter tank will not do it. Let's say that, right? So you do that. So if we can apply the same principles to our mental health, it makes a huge difference. If I'm going to I know something says things are going to happen that we cannot control, you know, like when we lose a loved one, most of the time it's out of our control. We can't always prepare for that. And even when we prepare, it's never like enough. But if I know something's going to happen, you know, something is coming, then I need to kind of say, okay, how much gas do I have in my tank? right, to deal with this, the emotional stress that this will bring. And that makes a huge, huge difference. And so, you know, I'm grateful for, you know, people like you, Chris, coming, like, sharing your story, like, you know, going to a college, that big position. But then also, there's so many now, again, this, that speaks for itself. You can Google this stuff. How many people are leaving college, coming back home just because where the economy is, especially during COVID also, right? It's like a lot of people going home when you had, we all had different dreams for what 2020, 2021, and 2022 will look like. And here we are still in the middle of this pandemic and all lives have been shifted in a ways that literally make us feel powerless because it's out of our control. And that, again, that's the emotional toll of it. How are we dealing with it? We need to make, you know, allowance for it, per se. We need to prepare for it. We need to know, what do I need to fill my tank so I can make it through this hurdle, so I can make it through this day, so I can make it through this transition. And that's when, you know, the things like the resources you create are so great. You know, it's kind of having things like that, or self-help books, you know, whether it's going to, you know, therapy, counseling, talking to someone, building a support system and stay connected with it. You know, you even mentioned like staying active, like, oh, it must be like little things, but they're all little things that impacts your mental health in such a big way. And that makes a huge, huge difference. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that. I'm just so grateful that we got to connect and got to do this. And so
I'm honored to be here. Thank you for that.
Definitely. So before we go, you know, I got two more questions here, I'll say. So my next question, my second to last, I'll say, will be, what advice will you give to other Black men out there right now in this world that we live in? Because the world we live in itself is stressful and impacts our mental health in so many ways. You know, as a Black man walking down the street can be just a whole anxiety attack coming, right? Just because of, again, the world we live in. So go ahead.
Yeah. My advice to Black men out there it's okay to be vulnerable. And what I mean by that is that that's where the true strength lies. Mm-hmm. If you're able to release, that's better for you than to hold things in and allow things to kill you slowly. That's just my take on that. You know, your true strength is what you allow yourself to share. And you don't understand, you know, closing your mouth in situations where you should have them open and let things out. You don't know what they can do, not for yourself, but other people as well. Because there's people that are, you could be a voice to other folks that are not able to speak, and you could give them the power to speak. And, you know, you let yourself be used as a vessel. It's okay to put yourself out there. And I think that's one thing I've learned, that that's true strength to me.
That is
so.
That is well said. And honestly, it's scientifically and biblically proven, you know, that yes, you know, we have to share this testimony. We have to share what we've been through so that we strengthen someone else. Mm-hmm. You know, things we've been through is not just for us, it's to help someone else. But also as we share, there's deliverance that comes with that, right? We overcome by the words of a testimony. But and that's from a psychological standpoint. When you share, not only you're taking it, not only you allows you to process and, you know, and literally purge what's maybe holding you back or overwhelming, but as you purge, you're taking your power back. You're literally saying, you like, this situation that is, you know, seems so huge right now, it's, you know, I'm gonna choose to have power over it by sharing it and releasing it. And so it liberates you as you release. So if it's with a counselor or from a friend, you know, then yes, there's a difference. Don't turn your friends into your counselor. That boundary needs to be there. But also as you share, you know, in safe places, it liberates you, but then it also empowers someone else to share as well. So the thing that, so you hold, like you said, it's just exactly what you said. You holding on to something, you know, holds you back, but then holds everybody else back as well. When I share, I feel better about it. I process it. I decide to move on. But then that story becomes a path for someone else to also move on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So definitely thank you for that great advice. Thank you. So my last one here, I hate to close this up, but you know, even good things have to come to an end. But I want you to share where people can get your books, where people can connect with you, the YouTube channel. That way, again, they can, you know, continue to follow you and learn from you and, you know, glean from your wisdom.
Okay. And my books are both, I have Postgrad Depression and 24 Ways to Discover Self-Enlightenment, Step-by-Step Guide. Both of those are on Amazon. You can type in the titles with my name, Christopher Anthony King II. Also, my YouTube channel is just Chris King II, C-H-R-I-S, K-I-N-G, and then two I's, capital I's for the Roman numeral. Mm-hmm. So that's where you can find me on YouTube as well.
Awesome. We'll make sure we'll include those links. For everyone watching and listening, thank you so much for being here. And just like Chris shared, pleasure. You know, yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Definitely, it's a blessing. And yeah, for all audience, just know that your story is not over yet. And sometimes those, you know, those hurdles, that's how I call them, they come and they might delay the process. They might lead to certain mm-hmm. detours. But as long as you stay focused, like, you know, and not give up like Chris did, you know, kind of holding or have setting those goals and then start speaking things into existence, right? It's like, I know that I want to do this afterwards. And that those goals that you set becomes the driving force that pushes you to, you know, to push through and bounce back from those hurdles.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yes. All right, everyone. Be blessed. It's an honor for, you know, to do this.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me again. Mm-hmm. Thank you.